we're on page 289, and it's our second story in the part two of the book, and it's Fear of Fear. And I'll get going, and let's see what we can glean out of this story. This lady was cautious. She decided she wouldn't let her go in her drinking, and she would never, never take that morning drink. So this author is obviously female. It's Ceil Mansfield, Ceil, C-E-I-L, Mansfield. And her date of sobriety is July of 1949. All right, let's go. I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I thought my problem was that I had been married to a drunk for 27 years. And when my husband found AA, I came to the second meeting with him. I thought it was wonderful, simply marvelous for him, but not for me. Then I went to another meeting, and I still thought it was wonderful for him, but not for me. So we see where we're starting here in this first paragraph. And again, we like to see why this story would have been chosen. All of our stories are put in the book for identification, potential identification. And so when I ask myself that question, why was it chosen? I think the, but also to keep in mind that we're in part two of the book, which is they stopped in time. So one of the criteria would have to be that it's a higher bottom, not lost everything. And certainly when we read her story, she's going to meet that criteria. The other thing that we saw immediately in this first paragraph is that she comes as support for her spouse. She doesn't initially come for her own drinking. And we've heard this in the rooms before. So I think that's another big thing. Now, this next one is more subjective, but I think we're going to hear it. And I'm saying it early in the reading so that you listen for it also. Since she came in 1949, she tells us later on that she's written this story a few years into sobriety. And why does that make perfect sense? Because that means that they need stories for the second edition, which is going to come out in 1955. So I think we can extrapolate that she's writing the story around 1954, and she'd have a few years sobriety then. She, at that time, when she writes this story with a few years sobriety, she's age 52. And the thing that's more subjective is that it can't be taken in a vacuum. The 12 and 12 has just been published. When she writes this in 54, the 12 and 12 has just been published, has a little bit more of an intellectual style to it, has a little bit less of that battle, that soft battle that's going on between sounding very biblical, our program sounding very biblical, and sounding a little bit more modern, intellectual, which I think we can get from the 12 and 12. And the other thing to keep in mind is that the AMA has just classified alcoholism as a disease. So those two little bits of information, I think, are important. And we're also going to see she's a Manhattanite. And I think those three elements are knowing that as the foundation, I think, is going to listen to this with a different ear. And I think certainly I would describe her as much more apt to be a member who's had a spiritual awakening rather than a spiritual experience, which maybe we saw more of those in the pioneer stories. So, okay, so that being said, let's get hot. That was on a hot summer evening down in the Greenwich Village group. And there was a little porch out there in the old meeting place on Sullivan Street. And after the meeting, I went out on the steps for some air. In the doorway stood a lovely young girl who said, "Are you one of us souses too?" I said, "Oh, goodness, no. My husband is. He's in there." She told me her name, and I said, "I know you from somewhere." It turned out she had been in high school with my daughter. I said, "Eileen, are you one of those people?" And she said, "Oh, yes, I'm in this." And Rob's put up on the screen a picture of the old meeting place on Sullivan Street, which is 179 Sullivan Street. They don't meet there now. They meet at 487 Hudson. But I thought it was interesting to see this picture, A, and getting the picture. And you can see off to the bottom right there, that's where she's talking about where she's gone down. And that's sort of the, you know, the concrete porch there and the steps and needing air. It's July of 49. I can just imagine it being stifling. But in looking into it a little bit more, this is Mayor LaGuardia's former home. And for young Neil, who's on the call tonight, it is also the former home of James Gandolfini, a.k.a. Soprano, which I think is very appropriate that A.A. would be, you know, associated with that sort of thing. So let's go on. We'll see what else we can get here. As we walked back through the hall, I, for the first time in my life, said to another human being, "I'm having trouble with my drinking, too." She took me by the hand and introduced me to the woman that I am very proud to call my sponsor. This woman and her husband are both in AA. And she said to me, "Oh, but you're not the alcoholic, it's your husband." I said, "Yes." She said, "How long have you been married?" I said, 27 years. She said, 27 years to an alcoholic? How did you ever stand it? I thought, now, here's a nice sympathetic soul. This is for me. I said, "Well, I stood it to keep up the home, to keep the home together and for the children's sake." She said, "Yes, I know. You're just a martyr, aren't you?" I walked away from that woman, grinding my teeth and cursing under my breath. Fortunately, I didn't say a word to George on the way home. But that night, I tried to go to sleep, and I thought, "You're some martyr, Jane. Let's look at the record." And when I looked at it, I knew I was just as much a drunk as George was, if not worse. I nudged George in the morning and I said, "I'm in." And he said, "Oh, I knew you'd make it." So right there with her second meeting, George's third meeting, she's already a member now. She's in. I started drinking nearly 30 years ago, right after I was married. My first drinking spree was on corn liquor, and I was allergic to it, believe me. I was deathly sick every time I took a drink. But we had to do a lot of entertaining. My husband liked to have a good time. I was very young, and I wanted to have a good time too. The only way I knew to do it was to drink right along with him. So, you know, what jumped off the page at me was the corn liquor. Like, what's that all about? And if we do the math, she comes in 1949. She's been married 27 years. So we do 1949 minus 27 brings us back to 1922. What's that? Prohibition. Ratified in 1919, goes into effect 1920, January of 1920, and goes through to 1933. So corn liquor just means that it's bootleg. This is bathtub gin, you know? So, and then that's the only other thing. And noticing that she says that she's very young, that would imply that she was probably got married, you know, in that in 20 years old, 19 years old, you know, pretty common in those days. All right. I got into terrific trouble with my drinking. I was afraid, and I had made my mind up that I would never get drunk. So I was watchful and careful. We had a small child and I loved her dearly. So that held me back quite a bit in my drinking career. Even so, every time I drank, I seemed to get in trouble. I always wanted to drink too much. So I was watchful, always watchful, counting my drinks. If we were invited to a formal party and I knew they were only going to have one or two drinks, I wouldn't have any. I was being very cagey because I knew that if I did take one or two, I might want to take five or six or seven or eight. I did stay fairly good for a few years, but I wasn't happy and I didn't ever let myself go in my drinking. After my son, our second child, came along, and as he became school age and was away at school most of the time, something happened. I really started drinking with the bang. So there's her progression. Some of her controlled drinking, having the children. She didn't have these barriers in her way. And again, I think this next paragraph is going to really touch on the example of her being a fairly high bottom drunk. I never went to a hospital. I never lost a job. I was never in jail. And unlike many others, I never took a drink in the morning. I needed a drink, but I was afraid to take a morning drink because I didn't want to be a drunk. I became a drunk anyway, but I was scared to death to take that morning drink. I was accused of it many times when I went to play bridge in the afternoon, but I really never did take a morning drink. I was still woozy from the night before. I should have lost my husband. And I think the only fact that he was an alcoholic too kept us together. No one else would have stayed with me. Many women who have reached the stage that I had reached in my drinking have lost husbands, children, homes, everything they hold dear. I have been very fortunate in many ways. Now she's going to describe what her true bottom is. She didn't lose those other things, right? The important thing I lost was my own self-respect. I could feel fear coming into my life. I couldn't face people. I couldn't look them straight in the eyes. Although I had always been a self-possessed, brazen person, I'd brazen anything out. I lied like a trooper to get out of many scrapes. But I felt a fear coming into my life, and I couldn't cope with it. I got so that I hid quite a bit of the time, wouldn't answer the phone, and stayed by myself as much as I could. I noticed that I was avoiding all my social friends, except for my bridge club. I couldn't keep up with any of my other friends, and I wouldn't go to anyone's house unless I knew they drank as heavily as I did. I never knew it was the first drink that did it. I thought I was losing my mind when I realized that I couldn't stop drinking. That frightened me terribly. George tried many times to go on the wagon. If I had been sincere in what I thought I wanted more than anything else in life, a sober husband and a happy, contented home, I would have gone on the wagon with him. I did try for a day or two, but something would always come up that would throw me. It would be a little thing, the rugs being crooked, or any little silly thing that I think was wrong, and off I'd go drinking and sneaking my drinks. I had bottles hidden all over the apartment. I didn't think my children knew about it, but I found out they did. It's surprising how we think we fool everybody in our drinking. I reached a stage where I couldn't go into my apartment without a drink. I thought that was interesting. Typically we'd hear, yeah, I couldn't go to the party without drinking. You know, I couldn't leave the house without having a few shots first. No, she couldn't go into her apartment without a drink. It didn't bother me anymore whether George was drinking or not. I had to have liquor. Sometimes I would lie on the bathroom floor, deathly sick, praying I would die, and praying to God as I always had prayed to him when I was drinking. Dear God, get me out of this one and I'll never do it again. And then I'd say, God, don't pay any attention to me. You know I'll do it tomorrow. The very same thing. Again, more progression. But I think what's really important there is it's the hopelessness. We see that she knows she's beyond now. She's powerless, hopeless, can't manage her way out of this thing. I used to make excuses to try and get George off the wagon. I'd get so fed up with drinking all alone and bearing the burden of guilt all by myself that I'd egg him on to drink to get started again. And then I'd fight with him because he had started. The whole merry-go-round would go on again. And he, poor dear, didn't know what was going on. He used to wonder when he'd spot one of my bottles around the house, just how he could have overlooked that particular bottle. I myself didn't know all the places I had them hidden. So what we've seen up to this point, in Experience, Strength, and Hope, we've seen what it was like and what happened. The rest of the story now is going to go into her sober time. And so this is also where she tells us that when she's writing this, she's a few years sober. We have only been in AA a few years, but now we're trying to make up for lost time. 27 years of confusion is what my early married life was. Now the picture has changed completely, psychic change. We have faith in each other, trust in each other, and understanding. AA has taught us that. It has taught me so many things. It has changed my thinking entirely and everything I do. So sounds a little third steppy there without sounding spiritual. Will and life, thinking and what I do, thoughts and action. I can't afford resentments against anyone because they are the buildup of another drunk. I must live and let live and think. That one important word means so much to me. My life was always act and react. I never stopped to think. I just didn't give a whoop about myself or anyone else. So there's her selfishness, self-centeredness. I try to live our program as it has been outlined to me one day at a time. I try to live today so that tomorrow I won't be ashamed when I wake up in the morning. In the old days, I hated to wake up and look back at what last night had been like. I never could face it in the next morning. And unless I had some rosy picture of what was going to happen that day, I just wouldn't even feel like getting up in the morning at all. It really wasn't living. Now I feel so very grateful, not only for my sobriety, which I try to maintain day by day, but I'm grateful also for the ability to help other people. I never thought I could be useful to anyone except my husband and my children, and perhaps a few friends. But AA has shown me that I can help other alcoholics. So step 12. Now she's going to talk for a moment about prior to getting sober. Many of my neighbors devoted time to volunteer work. There was one woman especially, and I'd watch her from my window every morning, leaving faithfully to go to the hospital in the neighborhood. I said to her one day when I met her on the street, "What sort of volunteer work do you do?" She told me it was simple. I could have done it very easily. She said, "Why don't you do it too?" I said, "I'd love to." She says, "Suppose I put your name down as a volunteer, even if you can only give it 1 or 2 days." But then I thought, well, now wait, how will I feel next Tuesday? How will I feel next Friday if I make it Friday? How will I feel next Saturday morning? I never knew. I was afraid to set even one day. I could never be sure I'd have a clear head and hands that were willing to do some work. So I never did any volunteer work, and I felt depleted, whipped. I had the time, I certainly had the capability, but I never did a thing. Now I am trying now each day to make up for all those selfish, thoughtless, foolish things I did in my drinking days. I hope that I never forget to be grateful. So I don't know if you heard it, but I certainly heard it even in that read, you know, the idea of fellowship, of gratitude, of trust and faith in each other, not a very, what I would call a spiritual presentation of her journey, of her AA journey. And I think it gets solidified a little further. She actually wrote her, she updated her story in the grapevine in September of 1968, and I'd like to read it. Not only did it appear in September of, it's short, it's one page. Not only did it appear in September of 68, but it's also in, was included in the 1999 November grapevine too. So let me just read this real quick, and I think it goes to my point that I made before. It's called So Changed a Life. The author of Fear of Fear updated her story. What a change in her lives since that day 18 years ago when George and I came into AA. We were two spiritually, mentally, and physically beaten people. Our children were ashamed of us. Our family did not want any part of us. Our drinking friends, the only ones we had, were as almost far gone as we were. So we were two lost lambs. More like goats, I would say. We were afraid of asking anyone for help, if we even knew we needed help. fed up with each other, ready to call the whole thing off without the strength to know where to look for help. Now, after these happy years, what do we have? We think, thank God, have each other. AA has taught us to be grateful. That sounds trite, but gratitude is the one thing neither one of us knew before AA. Our families can trust us. Again, as for our friends, most of them, with the exception of our church friends, are in the fellowship. And what friends? Physically, we are in better shape, and I do mean shape, than when we came in. Two shaky, befuddled people. My life has completely changed. George found it tough going financially for quite a while. So my gals in AA asked me, why did you not find a job? For years, I had been a housewife with absolutely no knowledge of office work. One of our AA gals got me a start in one of the very swanky advertising agencies as a receptionist. Not much was required of me to be a receptionist. At my age, it was something. It was fun, not much money, and not much work, but fun. Through the advertising agency work, I gained enough confidence to look for a job that would mean more responsibility and thus a better salary. I came to my present job and have been here for almost 8 years, getting advancements each year. After I've been here a few months, George got started again in his profession. Working has been quite an experience for me. I had always done volunteer work at my children's schools, our church, and our AA intergroup. But getting along with people who were my bosses and were paying me good money was a new and, for me, a frightening thing. My AA principles had to be applied, not just one day at a time, but every minute of each hour. The politics of an office were strange to me. I have always been honest in all my dealings, even while drinking. But this office hanky-panky was new. The thing that really concerned me was the fact that people did not believe me all the times. When I'd call in to say I was sick, I really was sick. The other gals sort of snickered at me when I said I didn't tell lies. I do love my workaday life, and I know if I had tried it about 19 years ago, I would not have the serenity it takes as I do now. Friends ask us why we continue to go to meetings, do 12-step work, and speak at another AA group. They ask, isn't 18 years enough time to prove you have the alcoholic problem licked? My answer is always the same, that I love AA, that it is the fellowship that has given us our lives, our freedom and happiness. We are not reformed drunks, but informed alcoholics. I know to whom I owe my gratitude, my fellow members of AA. I hope I shall never forget to be grateful. And she signed it CF, Manhattan, New York. And the scuttlebutt is that's just a misprint. It should have been CM. She was still married at the time. There was a suggestion that maybe she was using that as a professional, maybe her maiden name as a professional thing, maybe. But so that's it. I'm going to turn it over to you guys.